we have, according to how you look at it, three items before us today. One is Senate Bill 214, hunting by members of the military, and then the appointees for Board of Fish and Board of Game. So three items. We'll take up 214 first, and we'll go to Board of Game and then to Board of Fisheries. Today we have with us Senator Green, Senator Stevens, Huggins, Wilkowski, and my good friend Tom Wagner from Kenai. Two 14, Jody Simpson, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jody Simpson. I'm staff to Senator Huggins. I'm hoping that third time's a charm, and we have the luck of the Irish with us this afternoon because we have for your discussion and consideration this afternoon a second CS, and it is version Echo. You should have a copy of it in your packets. That basically, I feel and I hope, accomplishes the goals of the sponsor of the legislation and addresses the concerns of a couple members here in the two prior hearings. Version Echo basically accomplishes the following. It provides for military members, Coast Guard members, and their dependents. It waives the 12-month waiting period that is required currently in statute for them to become or to pay resident rates. It accords resident rate fees for permits and tags. I believe it addresses Senator McGuire's concerns. She had indicated she wanted to go back to the original language of the bill, and this does that, and it does not qualify them under other areas of the statute as residents. They are still defined as non-residents. I believe it addresses Senator Wagner's concerns in the fact that it doesn't open up dip netting and personal use fisheries for these folks until they have been here a year, and you should have a memo from, or an email from Kevin Saxby that confirms that on your desk.
Yes, there. And we each have that separately.
And it addresses the concerns of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association and others by retaining the guide component for the three most dangerous species. So I think we have hit upon a winner here, and it is the policy call of this committee to move it forward.
Very good. Any questions for Jody at this point in time? Yeah, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate all the work that's gone into this, and just want to make sure I understand military service activity. So, this would include the uniform military corps, the Corps of Engineers. Would that be true? They are uniform. Mm-hmm. They are military.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are a branch of the U.S. Army.
There would just be corps. The one colonel, though.
Well, there's a whole bunch of them. Corps of Engineers has a slew of people. And some are uniformed, some aren't, but the military people are the ones that are covered.
And I was thinking of the Uniform Medical Corps in the BIA.
Uniform Medical Corps is not covered by this bill.
Well, I just want to get the answer for that.
I'm glad I was able to provide you that answer.
Not covered. It's not military service.
Sure.
No, not covered.
They wear a uniform and they...
But not military.
Okay.
We have...
Well, I'll assume you know what you're talking about, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, we do have Chris Wright in the audience here, who is the licensing supervisor for the fish and game permitting process, and if you'd like,
yeah,
you can come up and
yeah,
address that.
Ms. Wright, if you'd come forward and put yourself on the record and anything you'd like to add to round the conversation out.
I'm Kristen Wright, and I'm the Finance Licensing Supervisor for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And in, through the chair, Senator Stevens, what we've done with BIA and other groups, if they're not considered, and there's some federal register that we go out and look at, part of the military, then we do not consider them military. And I'm sorry, I don't know off the top of my head. I know BIA is not.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It's if you're under Department of Defense, and as I recall, the military health service is under the Attorney General or the medical, what are we calling?
Very few individuals.
Surgeon General, right. non-military.
So, Mr. Chairman, I follow up on that. I'm very concerned about the Coast Guard, which is under the Department of Transportation, I think. They are under the
Homeland
Security.
And they're covered.
And they certainly are covered.
They're covered.
It's our intention to make sure Coast Guard are.
That's correct. Yeah. Specifically mentioned, right. So do you see, Ms. Wright, any administratively, any challenges in administering this?
Senator Huggins, I do not.
Okay, very good. Any questions for either Jody or Ms. Wright?
Okay.
Yes.
Senator Bukowski.
Is there someone from Fish and Game who could just talk? Have we had someone say whether this will impact the numbers of fish and wildlife available to residents? Will this have any kind of significant impact, do you expect?
Through the chair, Senator, they already hunt and fish now. We could have more numbers that could fish and hunt because it is going to be less than what they've been paying. But the fishing license is already comparable. They already pay the resident rate for a fishing license. It's the hunting. And very few participated in the hunting. Of course, they might. But it would always be a guess on the fiscal note I put. It's a guess to know how many would actually
do that. I support the bill. We've got a constitutional obligation to mandate for sustainable resource, and that's the only thing I'm getting at. And obviously, when you factor those things in, you'll have to take that into consideration. But you're not anticipating that this will have a significant impact on that.
Through the chair, Senator, they still will be considered non-residents. They will not be able to participate in the until they've met the one-year residency. They will not be able to participate in those personal use and subsistence fisheries, if that's maybe your concern, until that year is met, and they already are doing that.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you very much. And let's go to Mr. Kevin Saxby. Kevin, is there anything you'd like to add here for clarification in your reading? We have your email, which thank you very much for.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I missed what you said while we were unmuting there. Did you want me to say something?
Well, if there's something that you think you need to say to round out the conversation, we have your email, which is, I think, a good description of what the bill does. But if there's something you think needs clarification based on the conversation thus far.
No, sir, I don't have anything to add. I'm just here to answer questions if anyone has.
Okay, thank you then. And in that case, we will go to Kodiak, Mr. Frank Bishop. Hello, Mr. Bishop in Kodiak. Yes, it's Charlie Huggins here in Juneau. You signed up to speak to hunting by members of the military, Senate Bill 214.
I sure did.
Yes, if you would. Yeah, we can't hear you very well.
How about now?
Yeah, that's better. If you just put yourself on the record, we'll be proud to hear from you.
Okay. For the record, my name is Frank Bishop. I've been a resident of Alaska for the past 37 years. And just for the record, I'm a combat vet myself. And I'm really disagree with what's trying to be done here. I think you're trying to make a special status of citizen here. At the present time, all of our military are all voluntary. That's correct, isn't it?
That is correct.
And I think this will have a drastic impact on the local populations of people and the economy of a lot of people that make their living from non-residents. I just want to go on the record to say that I for one, am very, very much against. I did hear in here that they wouldn't be allowed to subsistence fish or hunt for the 1 year, and I hadn't heard that or read that anywhere else. I just believe that it's unfair to the local residents of the state. You're making a special class of citizen, and if we bring everybody that's in the state under this, that that does things for life-saving. Do we bring in the people that come in from outside that are policemen or state troopers or firefighters? I don't know. I just think it'd be wrong.
Yeah, Mr. Larson, Charlie Huggins, just to clarify a couple of things, that for those species that require guiding the first year, that will continue. So if you're going to go sheep hunting, you're going to go brown bear hunting or goat hunting, you still have to have a guide. So that remains in effect for those that need a guide. The other part that some have pointed out, the difference in some of the professions and vocations you pointed out is the military people are sent here on orders. It may be they want to come. It may be they don't want to come. They don't have a choice. It's a little bit different than interviewing for a job in Alaska and moving here. And the other component, and I'll just add this on, we haven't discussed this today, is that a lot of the young men and women are coming to Alaska for a matter of months at this point in time and then shipping out to Iraq or Afghanistan, and some of them don't come back. And we just have to keep that in mind. And I characterize it as us looking at it being good hosts for young people that are really making a sacrifice for the country potentially. So, but we thank you very much, and thank you for your years of service as being a combat veteran. And next we have Bobby Fithian from Professional Hunters Association.
Yes, Chairman Huggins and members of the Resources Committee, we thank you for the opportunity to testify today. APHA is in strong support of the concept of this bill. We very much appreciate the sponsors working with us to delete those previous two sections 2 and 3 that dealt with the guide required species. And as a whole, our membership supports the committee substitute as we have seen it currently. And we just thank you for your continued effort in this regard, Chairman Huggins.
Okay. Hey, Bobby, and thank you for the association and what you do, and you're taking the time out to testify today. Questions or comments for Mr. Fithian? thank you, Bobby. Next, we'll go to Matt Sue, Mr. Bruce Knowles. Hello, Bruce, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here now.
Yeah, you're coming in a little bit weak.
Okay, how's that?
Loud and clear.
Okay, I'm a retired military. I'm a 100% disabled vet, and I love this bill. I think that the people that don't understand the military and those that have been out for years cannot understand the military we have today and the sacrifices these people are making. I've got a son that's in the military. And these people deserve everything that we can give them. And the fact that they won't be able to do the personal use fisheries, I think, is short-sighted, but that's what the people want. I support the bill, and I hope that it goes through, and maybe down the road we can give them the personal use dip netting and stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce, and thanks for your service. Next we go to Matsu, Mr. Tom Logan.
Yeah, can you hear me, Charlie?
Yeah.
Tom Logan, Big Lake.
Yeah, Tom, we got you loud and clear. Continue, please.
Yes. I have a personal experience on this. I came to Alaska a lot of years ago, and thank God, when I got here, I was being transferred up here with the military. The second day in Alaska, I bought a non-resident hunting license to go hunting for caribou, et cetera. And I didn't sign into my base for 10 days. But the next year, I used my non-resident's hunting license to show that I'd been in Alaska over a year, although it was a year and 2 days, and bought a regular hunting license. And Fish and Game tried to say no because the military said you didn't get here till a certain date, so you got a big fine. Sorry about that. And I had to show them my old license, but they still didn't want to accept that I had been in 10 days before the date was up. I got out of it. but I think that a lot of our young men, I know in my outfit in Anchorage, I mean, at Elmendorf, there was some other people that done the same thing. They came up early, they hunted on a non-resident license, and then wound up paying a fine because they couldn't document that they had been here ahead of time. And so I think this bill is long overdue. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Tom. Questions or comments to Mr. Logan? Yeah, and Tom, you know, it's the sort of thing that you described that a lot of people would just never think of, and we appreciate you bringing that to our attention. Next, we'll go to Mr. McHugh, Pierre, who is here. No? Just, okay. You have anything to add, or we'll bring you up here? Okay. Is there anybody else in the room who wants to speak to this bill? Okay. Senator Stevens, if I could have a motion to move version ECHO before the bill.
I move that... You ready to move it out of committee?
Right,
move the CS for Senate Bill number 214, version E, for discussion purposes.
Okay. So just in summation of what we've heard, the concerns as described before about residency status, non-resident license, which we've complied with that, the personal use fishery, subsistence fishery has been taken care of, the three species have been carved out. We heard from the Professional Hunters Association. Mr. Bishop of Kodiak had some concerns, but you know, there's always going to be some concerns. But be that as it may, I think Mr. Logan sort of summed it up. It's hard to figure out sometimes what may happen to you under provisions that you think you're innocent of. So questions or comments of committee members on Senate Bill 214? Senator Stevens?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move out CS for Senate Bill number 214 / E out of committee with the attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 214 will be moved to its next committee of referral, and we will take about a 3 minute at ease. We have three people up for consideration, Mr. Ted Spraker, Mr. Craig Fleener, and Mr. Lewis Bradley. And first up will be Mr. Ted Spraker. Ted, are you there? Hello, Mr. Spraker.
Mr. Chairman, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, if it's all right, I'd like to make just a very brief opening statement, a couple minutes. Perhaps.
Yeah, if you would, Ted, but put yourself on the record first and any affiliations you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ted Spraker. I'm a current member of the Board of Game. I'm also seated as a member on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. As far as affiliations, those are the two that I'll be discussing today and representing today.
Yeah, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Resources Committee, first I'd like to say I certainly appreciate all the work that you folks do, and I certainly appreciate this opportunity to speak to your committee this afternoon. Again, for the record, my name is Ted Spraker. I live in Bogotá with my wife and family. I was raised in Wyoming, where I went to school at the University of Wyoming. I completed my bachelor's degree in wildlife management in 1971, and then completed a master's degree in range management in 1973. I moved to Alaska in July of 1973. I'm about a 35-year resident, and I'm 59 years of age. As far as my work career, my primary job during all these years has been to work with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game as a wildlife biologist, and I served for 28 years and 4 months in that position. I retired in June of 2002, and in January of 2003, I was appointed to the Board of Game, and I was just recently reappointed to my third term by Governor Palin. I've also, for the last couple of years, served as the vice chair of the Board of Games. I also hold the Board of Games seat on the Big Game Commercial Services Board, and I've been on that board since it was established about 3 years ago. And Mr. Chairman, as far as trying to answer the question of why I'd like to stay on the Board of Game, my answer is that wildlife management and working with the public has been my lifelong career, and I enjoy the position on the board, on both of these boards, and I certainly look forward to the challenges in the future and look forward to continuing my service. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I'll stop and do my best to answer any questions.
Okay, quick questions for Mr. Spraker. Ed, let me ask you initially, could you highlight a couple of contributions in your tenure on the board that you've made that you're particularly proud of?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been on the board since 2003, and I guess one of the contributions that I always try to work towards and try to do my best is to use my long career working with Fish and Game to present, or at least listen very carefully to the scientific data that's presented. And I was told long ago that as long as you look after the resource and do the best you can as far as maintaining healthy populations and healthy habitats, that you're always going to make the right decisions. I also try to mix that scientific background with trying to consider where the public comes into the equation, because oftentimes there's a lot of compelling resource information as far as the science information, but there's also very strong sentiment and very strong controversy. A good example was the cow hunt in Fairbanks that we dealt with for a couple days and finally made, I think, a fairly good decision on that. But those are some of the things that I really try to do, is make a balance between the science and the public. As far as any specific contributions, as you know, we work as a team on the board. I try my best, again, to represent all users across the state. I think I'm very fair on that, although I'm certainly criticized in some circles for not recognizing individual concerns and small group concerns. Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there and see if I've answered your question.
No, very well, Ted. Thank you for that. Are there other questions or comments on Mr. Spraker? Ted, while other people are looking at formulating their questions going forward, when you think about your tenure and the contributions you made, what are the challenges you see in the next 24 months going forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a lot of challenges that we deal with. It seems like every year with the subsistence mandates that we work with, and the board has struggled with the issues in Unit 13. This is the Nelchina caribou hunt. I know the Otna Corporation has not been pleased with some of the outcomes of the board because it didn't address some of the issues that they wanted to see us address. I think we have a good record across the state as far as how we deal with subsistence. Of course, we have a mandate that we are very sensitive to and we adhere to as carefully and accurately as we can. Other issues that I see that are huge in our state, of course, is our desire to manage predators across the state. We have a very clear mandate to increase populations in certain areas, especially populations that are depleted, where subsistence needs are not being met. Those are clearly been challenges, both from the scientific standpoint and the legal standpoint. I think the board, especially the Department of Law, as we've done our best to try to keep those programs going where they're justified, and so far we've been extremely successful. And one of the things that I've said from the very beginning, when I was first put on the board and first talked about management of predators, is that the residents of this state, and residents in other states as well, really deserve a well-thought-out and long-term program as far as management predators, so that they can see, in an unbiased situation, they could see what happens if predators are managed in some of these areas where populations of prey are depleted. And I think we have that. We saw information here just recently of what is going on in the grass and how well that population has responded to reduced impact by predators, primarily wolves and bears. And I think the public is glad to see this information provided to them. And I think that's been a huge challenge of this board, and I think we've done our best to try to balance the scientific information with the public's desires and meet the mandates of subsistence needs.
Yeah, Ted, thank you for that. Let me ask you, seeing no other question at this point from other committee members, recently at one of the statewide organizational meetings, there was some presentations by the department on intensive management, and it appears that there's at least one intensive management coordinator up in the interior. Has that ever been a discussion point on the board?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm not exactly clear on your question. Maybe restate it for me?
Yeah, intensive management coordinators as part of the department. I just wonder if that's ever been a point of discussion. Not predator business, just the whole business of intensive management when the species has its challenges. Probably not within your purview. Let me jump to the very next one. That's habitat. Are there any success stories or any conversations or debates that you've been involved in that revolved around habitat, the adequacy or improvement thereof, or anything that you might have experience with in that respect, particularly as it might apply to moose, because you were spent some time around the national moose area?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a lot of success programs across the state as far as habitat. The unfortunate thing is that they're always associated with wildfires, because when you deal with habitat issues with moose, as we all know, it requires such a large amount of land that it's difficult and financially difficult to enhance habitat over large areas. However, a good example would be in the interior, where we've had a lot of these wildfires. The area over and around Fairbanks and over further east of there, where we've had some wildfires, the habitat has responded. And of course, in those cases, we've seen strong increases in numbers of moose. I know that the department has dealt with a couple of these responses in the moose, in allowing for the harvest of antlerless moose in some of these areas. And there's been a lot of success programs as far as increasing the number of moose, but it's primarily due to wildfires. And again, we've done some of that work on the Kenai, where I was working for most of my career, but we were only able to do small areas. And in those areas, we were successful. Moose numbers increased, but it wasn't an increase at the population level that we really needed to see.
Yeah, thank you for that answer, Ted. Other questions or comments on Ted? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. What's your, in your opinion, are there other things other than predators that are impacting the number of wildlife, ungulates, for instance, big game hunters, things of that nature?
Through the chair, there's a variety of things. You know, that's one thing that we always say. It's generally, or it's rarely, just one thing that impacts prey. There's basically three things that kill moose. You know, one is weather, the other is predators, and the last we always joke about is high-velocity lead. And those are pretty much the three things that impact moose populations. And that's where, you know, allocation efforts by the board to try to balance some of those things really come into play. And I realize that, you know, in a lot of cases, we can't do much about it. We have an issue right now with sheep across most of the state, or at least large portions of the state, and we're very concerned about declining numbers of sheep. And in this case, it may be predators, it may be weather. We're pretty sure it's not hunters because they're only allowed to take a certain segment, and it's a small segment of the ram. So to answer your question, it certainly is a result of several different factors, and it's rarely just one.
Okay, thank you, Ted. One final comment is just a general. Are there any conflicts that you might have in your position on the board that we should be aware of?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the only opposition I had to my reappointment was with a letter written from the Otna Corporation. I know the gentleman that wrote the letter well. I knew him in the early 70s. Actually, I worked in Glen Allen from 74 to 78. He was an individual, worked for him. And he wrote a letter in opposition. And I can understand. I called him. I talked to him at length about it. And I guess I'm a little surprised that he went ahead and wrote the letter and sent it. But I've had some opposition because of my stand on statewide users and one of the issues that I was kind of confronted with is that I voted in favor of a salary cap on subsistence hunters in Unit 13. I also voted in opposition to a proposal that would have eliminated all the Fairbanks and Anchorage hunters as far as Tier 2 and Unit 13 when the number of permits was around 2,000 or so permits. I felt that was unfair to users across the state. I also felt that the salary income was something that was needed to better characterize a subsistence user and meet the 8 criteria that we are mandated to look at. And I know that I was criticized on both of those issues. And I think those two issues generated a letter in opposition to my reappointment.
We have a copy of that.
Mr. Chairman, I've also had a fair amount of opposition from a couple groups that have been strongly opposed to management of wolves. And I don't know that I have any letters of opposition, but I know that I've been criticized, I guess is a proper word, you know, for not being more supportive of their preservation sort of opinions.
Okay, thank you for that answer, Ted. And Senator Wilkowski has a question.
Yeah, read an article recently, got a few comments from constituents about the wolverine trapping in east of Anchorage, I guess Chugach State Park. And I guess I would just ask you to take a look at that. I guess there's about 12 wolverines there, and they ended up trapping 6 dogs. Some were conibear traps, and is there going to be a relook at that? in light of what happened, some of the traps were, you know, right off trails and things like that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, actually, at the last board meeting, we did take a very careful look at that. In fact, I offered an amendment to that proposal, and the amendment addresses a 50-yard setback on either side of the trail where trappers cannot set traps or snares. There's also a quarter-mile setback from all the trailheads and campgrounds and along the Seward Highway. And the other part of that amendment was to require all trappers to identify their traps with trap tags to show responsibility of the trappers and ownership of the trap to address the dog issue and so forth. Two of those dogs were actually caught in the park. Four were caught outside of the park. We've also, you know, worked with the trappers in trying to eliminate some of these conflicts. That issue, to answer your question on coming back, I'm sure that will come back maybe several times until something has changed. And one other change that the board has made is we also reduced the length of the season by 2 weeks. So we've made quite a few efforts during the last board meeting to address some of the conflicts and some of the issues that were brought before the board. And I look forward to dealing with this issue in the future. And hopefully we can reduce some of the conflicts, or most of the conflicts, and kind of resolve that issue with the local public.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that, Ted. We do not have a copy of the letter that you were referring to. Ted, if you would fax or mail it to us, we'd appreciate that so members could see the copy of the letter that you were describing.
Yes, sir. I'd be glad to.
Yep. Are there further questions for Mr. Spraker? Okay, seeing none. Ted, thank you very much. Next, we will go to Mr. Craig Fleener. Hello, Craig.
I hear something.
I hear something. Yeah. Mr. Craig Fleener.
No.
Okay, next we'll go to the final candidate for Board of Game is Mr. Lewis Bradley from Metsu. Lou, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Chairman Huggins.
Yep, you betcha. Could you put yourself on the record, Lou, and give us an overview of your background and why we should celebrate your appointment?
Okay. My name is Lewis Bradley. You want a history of my, or just a reason why I should get appointed?
Yeah, just an overview.
I've been an Alaska resident for 35 years. I've enjoyed the last frontier lifestyle of hunting and fishing, working hard. I want the same opportunity for my grandchildren and all Alaskans. I think we have a great state and lots of opportunities, but prudent management of our natural resources to provide fair and equitable use on a sustainable level and is wise. We need to be, no person knows it all. We are all Alaskans, and we need to work together using knowledge and experience to make wise decisions, to make or restore abundance of fish and wildlife to Alaska. We have some declining populations. It's my desire to be involved in this direction that Alaska takes regarding this fishing game in the years ahead. My history is I was born in Hot Springs, Arkansas 62 years ago. I graduated in 1964 in Oregon and from high school. I was student body president, and I was going to lots of other things. I was married in 1965 to my wife. I've been married for 43 years. I guess that speaks a little bit that I have some negotiating experience. I was raised two children in Alaska, a son Travis and a daughter Holly. I came to Alaska in 1967 in the military and was here for almost 3 years. Discharged in 1970. I got a bachelor of science degree, physical education in 1972, and then wanted to come back to Alaska. There was no jobs up here in physical education, so I went an extra year and got a degree in elementary education and for grades K through 8, and got a job, landed a job in Wausau, and taught third grade for 2 years. PE job opened up because the area was really growing, and I finished the next 24 years in physical education, and I got a private pilot's license in 1985. Basically, I coached at after school sports for 26 years. Co-founded the Wausau Little Dribblers basketball program with Reed Smith in 1975.
Yeah, Lou, I think that's a pretty good summation. I would be delinquent. Cody, our youngest son, wanted me to tell you hello and thank you for coaching him and the developmental basketball business over time.
That's great.
Yeah. Let me just ask you a question, Lou. I noticed that you do antler carving and picking up antlers. Did you have any success this winter picking up?
You know, I've been busy with the appointment here, and I've been putting off a house project for 3 years, and I've been busy all winter. And I picked most of my antlers up in the spring, and comb glaciers and stuff for sheep horns that sheep that died of attrition. But yeah, I do usually every spring go out. I spend usually anywhere from 2 weeks to a month doing that.
Yeah, very good, very good. Well, you know, I mentioned that in the sense that I've had several constituents contact myself or a staff member that they're concerned that in some of the state-controlled areas that there may be a restriction placed on people being able to pick up antlers. So I think it's one of those things that at least a sizable number of Alaskans that I talk to don't necessarily support that. So I just highlight that to you as you go forward. Keep it on your radar screen.
Sure.
Senator Wilkowski has a question for you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bradley, this is a very important commission and board, and charged with meeting our constitutional requirement of maintaining and managing our wildlife for sustainable yield. And can you describe your academic background in the areas of biology and wildlife management?
Well, I have a minor from University of Oregon in biology. I mean, being a PE teacher, there had quite a bit of science. You know, I had biology, chemistry, and other classes. But as far as you know, having a background like fish and game, I don't. Through hunting and just being around the state and all hunters should be, concerned about conservation, and if we want things for the future, and so you got to be concerned with habitat and, the bull-cow ratios and, the birth of, young calves and survival of yearlings and stuff. And so, it's a formal background I don't have, but it's, I do have some science background.
Yeah,
follow up.
What types of evidence do you believe should be presented to the board to demonstrate a need for intensive game management?
They have to show that there's a the game population based on their numbers of counting how many animals they think are in the area. They look at the bull-cow ratios, and they like to have them at 40 to per 100, and the they like to have high calving and the yearlings after a year, how many of them survive. And when these ratios go down and they don't have enough to meet their not necessary for subsistence, then you have a population that's, and of course you look at your habitat too, and if there's, if it's really overbrowsed, I mean, it wouldn't be overbrowsed, because overbrowsed would be, I mean, there are too many, but if they don't have the numbers there for hunting, then you have to look at other things that are causing it, and there's the predator ratio is up with bears or wolves, then these are the things you'd look at to make changes in trying to restore the population.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair, do you believe that scientific principles should be used in determining whether or not there's intensive game management?
Oh, definitely. You have to rely on science, otherwise you're just guessing. And that's why, fishing game, one thing I was really impressed with going through the last meeting that was at is the amount of information they do have. However, they are limited because of budgets. And, you know, they need more money so that they can put more people in the field and do more aerial surveys and have more accurate data. So they're limited to, based on the resources that they have. But you have to go with science. I mean, people can say, one thing is like global warming. They're talking about there's, people saying was, there's temperatures are rising and different things. But whenever they actually did a study, they're finding that when they threw out the high and the low, the mean showed that there really was just insignificant warming trends. So, that wasn't a factor, and so they have to look at other things. And so you have to look at the browse that's available, the predators. Of course, man is being a factor there. You have to consider him also, and take all these things into consideration, and you come up with a plan trying to restore the herd. But you have to go with science. And I mean, you listen to people that are out there, but we don't always see and aren't trained like the biologists. So you have to depend on that information.
If I could, a couple more questions, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair. Do you have any reservations regarding the current predator control programs around the state?
No, I think they're all the ones that I've seen, based on the information that was given, was necessary. It's something they need to keep an ongoing look at to make sure that that you don't overdo it on the predators. To me, predators are a game animal as well, and are important part of the equation. And need to be protected as well, but there needs to be a balance. And as far as the predator programs that are going on, I think they were needed because the populations were depressed, and they've been shown from in the most cases, some of them, if you look at the numbers, may not indicate it right away, but because they were so depressed that they're having a hard time coming back. But I think there are the other instances whenever the predator control was initiated, then there was right away you started seeing more calves, and the numbers are coming up.
If I could,
you have to keep a handle on it as far as who's doing it, and make sure it's done properly, so they can keep track of the numbers.
Okay. Another follow-up.
Yeah, do you have any opinion on the so-called urban versus rural wildlife issues?
You mean rural preference?
Yeah.
I believe that the people that, as far as subsistence goes, the ones that, first in 89, there was a difference, that the ruling was that everybody on state land is considered a subsistence user. I think people that actually live there, adjacent to the game, should have some priority if numbers are down in relation to somebody who lives in and doesn't use the game for traditional and customary use.
Yeah, good. Lou, let me ask you on, you mentioned that you had been to a board meeting. Are there any things that you would highlight that either surprised you or that you learned at the board meeting that you might want to share with us?
Yeah, I think that I was surprised at the amount of scientific information that was given out. In some cases, and they admitted that, you know, it wasn't as maybe as thorough as they would like, because they didn't, and sometimes it was a little bit old information, and the state is so large, and their numbers, if they had more biologists, they could do a better job. But even so, I thought some of them were really good. The EMMA program, which they have just south of Fairbanks, is kind of a it's been ongoing for a long time, and it you know, it could be, of course, every area is different, but it you know, the number of moose there has really jumped because of the predator control, and of course they've also established, I think, some better browsing area by opening up some things, and so that's made some changes. The problem is they just can't do that statewide, at least not at this point, because of funding. But yeah, and then, you know, everybody had a say. You know, we listened to 3 days of testimony from people, and you have ACs coming in from all the state, and they have more weight because they're representing a larger group. You have people, defenders of wildlife, and they were able to get up and say, so everybody was listened to, and you know, I think that's important. Everybody has to be, and it, I don't think the board took anything, you know, lightly and overlooked anybody, and tried to make the decisions based on fairness, not, I guess that's probably the biggest thing. I think the fairness factor and the thoroughness of the information that was given on the whole was the thing that impressed me most.
Right. And let me ask you finally for myself, Lou, is there anything that that the committee should be aware of that would be, quote, a conflict that we might should be that you could discuss with us, if there's anything?
Well, I haven't been on long enough for too many conflicts, I don't think. I was called the day after I got appointed by Defenders of Wildlife, and we talked, and you know, they asked me quite a few questions and asked me about predator control. I said, yes, I was I for predator control? I said, whenever populations are depressed, you know, I think we're mandated by statute to manage and set regulations for abundance. And I said, we're all defenders of wildlife. We're just defending maybe different groups. And I said, I'm not just defending the ungulates for, you know, prey populations to eat, but if you manage it properly and you have high populations, then they can withstand more predators. If you let it go a natural cycle, like they're indicating, is then you end up with predators eventually will knock their populations down, and then a lot of the predators may die off from starvation. So you've got a natural cycle. They go up and down, and no one wins except for, well, actually, no one does. And but if you keep it at a balanced level, then to me, everybody wins. And so, but he said he wasn't, you know, couldn't recommend me for the board because of my position on predator control. But and I told him I understood that, and they did say, well, they thanked me for my at least being honest and not trying to hedge around the. About my thoughts on that.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Other questions? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. In the meeting that you went to, or just in your research on Board of Game, any challenges that you see? Anything you think the board should be doing differently?
Well, you know, I'd like to, it would be nice if the funding didn't just come like someone said, 80% of the funding came from licenses from out of state hunters. I don't know what the solution is. Maybe, you know, really we've been spoiled in Alaska on the amount of money that we spend on licenses. I realize some people maybe couldn't spend pay more, but if you, I think you look around other states in lower 48 and, you know, we pay very little, and of course people coming up here from out of state, our resources maybe should be worth more than they are, and then we could put more people out in the field that could have a bigger impact on managing the animals. Predator control, I think, is something that's going to always be around. I'd rather call it predator control. I'd rather call it maybe wolf and bear management, just like you manage the ungulates. I think you need to manage the other ones. And there's people that want to take a bear maybe once in a lifetime, or you know, a wolf, and so they're important. You know, also not just to, I mean, to let's see. I think something that's going to probably, if we don't get a handle on it, is sheep hunting was my original, but I think it, you know, I don't know if the whole state will go with this, but 14C, or talk management, went to a trophy hunt area, that delta, and then 14C became a park and eventually went to a permit. And now 14A had, I think it was 38 guys that were able to hunt out of that area, and it just can't stand the pressure. And then 13D, so that took two more areas, and that forces hunters into smaller and smaller areas, and Talkeetnas are already depressed for sheep. And so, you know, you look at it and say, well, realistically, are we headed towards a permit system statewide? And if that's, the case, some things... there's going to be a lot of decisions that have to be made, but the number one, you know, priority has to be the animals and whatever it takes to keep them around forever. We no longer have a situation where we have like when I first got here in the military, it seemed like, and years before that, you talk to people, there was an unlimited supply, but now then there's not, and so I'm not sure permits is the way it's going to go or what, but I know there's some changes going to be made possibly with the Game Services Board for guides, and so I'm hoping that if that changes and has guides more responsible, and I don't say responsibility towards guides only, because resident hunters also have responsibility, but the guides have, there's about 600 of them, and there's and some of them are coming up in the lower 48, and there's competition, and I don't believe in all cases that the areas are being managed or hunted like they should be, and I'm hoping that some kind of a system comes up where they come in with plans and so there's a reasonable amount of game taken, and maybe we do not have to go to permit statewide. So I think this is a challenge that's directly ahead of us.
And then, yeah, I think it's my last one, but what do you have any thoughts on what the primary limiting factors affecting wildlife population in areas like 13B are?
13B?
Glen Allen.
Well, of course, you have to, you look at weather. Weather, the things that directly affect them are game populations or weather, of course. Disease can have to be a factor, but it's usually not here in Alaska for the most part. So weather is probably one of the biggest factors. The other is predators, both man and wild predators. And the other is would have to be the habitat, amount of browse and stuff that they have.
Do you think we're letting in... you mentioned big game hunters from outside. Do you think that's a problem here in Alaska?
Well, I do. I know it's probably a constitutional thing. If I personally could have my, I would like to see it where it was an in-state, had to be a resident to be a guide. I think you have more responsibility to the state. I see some of them coming up and here for a couple months. They take a lot of game. They even bring up outside assistant guys, and then they leave the state and take the money with them. So I would like to see some changes made in that. And I think it does. I don't think they necessarily have the same stewardship on the land maybe that the resident guy has.
Okay, other final questions for Mr. Bradley. Okay, hey, Lou, thank you very much, and we have one more candidate for the board of...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sorry, Senator Green.
I have just one comment for Lou. Thank you for presenting yourself for a membership on the board. I hope you feel the same about a year from now. Are you the appointee for the public seat, Lou?
I think I took, I didn't know you took any one particular person's okay. spot, but someone said that I took Mr. Somerville's seat. I'm not sure about that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Lou, and good luck in your endeavor going forward. Next, we will go to Mr. Craig Fleener. Hello, Craig, are you there?
Craig Fleener, yes, sir.
Yeah, put yourself on the record, please. Good to hear from you again.
Yes, you too. This is Craig Fleener from Port Yukon, Alaska, originally, and I'm currently living in Anchorage, trying to finish up my master's degree that I started in 99. Hopefully, I can finally get it done. Would you like me to wait there or go with some background?
Yeah, just give us a quick overview, if you would, Craig, so that we can get on with the questioning and any highlights that you want to bring to our attention of yourself.
Yes, thank you. Well, I guess my experience in my life has been, I served 4 years in the Marines from 86 to 90, and then after I got out a few months, I joined the National Guard. Excuse me, I have a cough, but I joined the National Guard in 91. I'm still currently serving in the National Guard, so I've been in the military almost 22 years now overall, and I've worked mostly in my life in natural resources type jobs. I've been an environmental coordinator, a natural resources manager. I've done subsistence surveys. I've done a whole lot of work doing with fisheries in the Yukon Flats primarily is where most of my experience is at. I've done quite a few moose surveys. I was the regional wildlife biologist for the Council of Athapascan Tribal Government for the 10 villages of the Yukon Flats. And the area is about 55,000 square miles, including Arctic Village down to Rampart over to Chalkeetsik and primarily the Yukon Flats and the upland areas around there. And I served on a number of boards and committees addressing issues like salmon population problems. And I currently serve on an example of one of the committees I'm on is an IUCN subcommittee on bison. And I served for about 10 years on the Eastern Interior Federal Regional Subsistence Advisory Committee for quite a few years as chairman, and I just resigned from that about a year ago. So I guess in a brief, some of the things that I've been up to over the past 20 or so years.
Questions for Craig? Craig, let me ask you an initial, I'm sorry, Senator Green.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to ask you if you had ever met Craig Fleener.
I have met Craig Fleener here in this building. He's quite an impressive young man.
He is very impressive young man who looks very young. And in reading his resume, I was absolutely astonished to see his list of accomplishments. And he is obviously a major multitasker because he's been doing lots of things at the same time, and in the process is, I think, getting his master's degree.
Yeah, Craig, you just got a major attaboy from Senate President.
I heard that. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Yeah, Craig, you might just because it, I mean, you do bring some unique qualities. Could you tell us about how you became a nominee or an appointee?
Well, I guess I have some people out there who kind of like me in the Native community and in the non-Native community alike. I've worked, you know, one of my major goals and partially accomplishments in life has been bridging the gap between the indigenous community in Alaska and the non-Native community, trying to, you know, make a path for us to be able to work together to solve problems that are common to all of us. And I think because of that, I've been seen as a guy people can work with. So I have a pile of friends that serve in a number of different capacities in the environmental community, in the Alaska Outdoor Council type people, and the Native community. And so I think that several folks put my name forward, and something happened to the phone. Is everyone still there?
Yeah, it was loud and clear. Okay. Continue.
I got a phone call one day from the governor's office saying that they were interested in my participation and asked me if I would do it. So I told them yes.
Yeah, very, very good. Let's go to something specific here. Once upon a time in 2001, you were part of a study that looked at beaver dam influence on fish distribution and
yes.
Black River drainage. What'd you find?
Well, it's kind of mixed. It wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. I thought that it would be an overwhelming display that beaver dams are bad for whitefish because they block access to and from lakes. And a number of the whitefish that use the lakes in the Yukon Flats need to be able to have access to the river. And one of the things that we are trying to determine is where whitefish spawn. You know, we just had for many years, and I think it's still kind of a big question. One of the things we're looking at is, do they spawn in some of our lakes? Well, I thought we were going to get a bunch of information saying that the dams were all bad, and what I wanted to do is go and remove some of the dams to allow whitefish better access. But what we discovered was that there were typically enough high water events by the river for Black River, Porcupine River, and Yukon River tributaries. There were enough high water events throughout the year that allowed fish to be able to go over the tops of the dams. Now, the high water events weren't constant, and they were, you know, periodic. Sometimes they lasted a couple of days, sometimes a few weeks, but it was decided by a guy that I've worked with the Fish and Wildlife Service, who has a lot more experience with whitefish than I do. He said that it was plenty of time for them to actually get in and out, and that we really shouldn't consider that it was totally bad. On the other hand, one of the things that I always try to do in the scientific research that I work on is incorporate knowledge of local people. And so my primary interest in doing the work was because whitefish is an extremely important subsistence food for folks in the Yukon Flats. And the folks in the flats were having a lot of problems actually being able to get whitefish. They noticed that there were some population problems. And so this is one of the things that local folks had attributed it to. And one of the reasons I think it was so important was because, as a research topic, was because traditionally one of the practices was for local populations to go and actually break beaver dams down and get access to a lot of whitefish. And that practice has kind of gone by the wayside. It's not entirely gone. Some folks still do it a little bit, but they believe that the beaver dams still have somewhat of an impact. And so I tried to incorporate that information into the research as well, saying, you know, that we can't only focus on the scientific side. We have to take a look at the human effect as well. So I guess that's that in a nutshell.
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Craig. And Senator Stevens has a question for you.
Well, thank you, Craig. I did appreciate having a chance to meet with you and chat with you. And your research papers are very impressive. I hope you'll continue to do that. But what are your plans when you finish your master's degree there in Anchorage? Are you will you be returned to Fort Yukon? Where will you be located after you finish a degree?
Well, that's the goal, and unfortunately, I'm kind of unemployed right now. I've been doing a little bit of contracting work here and there so I can pay the rent and help pay tuition, but I'm going to need some work, and so I've lived in Fort Yukon the majority of my life, except when I was in the military and when I was out with at school. I started my master's degree at the University of Calgary in Alberta, so of course I had to be out for a year there. So, yes, I would prefer to live in Fort Yukon if at all possible, but I'm going to be looking for work as well. The kind of the crazy thing about my degree is that it's a degree in wildlife biology, and for the last 4-5-ish years, I've done more executive management stuff. So unfortunately, and this is one of the reasons it's been hard to finish my degree, is because it's not as much of a priority in my work as it was back 7 or 8 years ago. So it's a tough question to answer, but the part about going back to Fort Yukon, that's a goal, depending where work takes me, and I might have to get another degree in management, which has actually been kind of on my list of things to do. I just have to make a couple of years of time available. But I got a lot of years to go.
Yeah. Other questions for Craig Fleener?
Well, Craig, I just will speak for myself, but I'm sure for those people that met you when you were in the building were probably equally as impressed as I was, which was substantial. I gave you an A+. So for what that means, I'm excited about your being on the board and the qualities you bring and your eloquence and all that, and you sort of kind of equal our future. So with that, unless there are further questions, Senator Green.
I just want to know his fountain of youth.
Yeah, fountain of youth. If you have a fountain of youth, Craig?
It's moose meat and king salmon.
Okay.
Well, since you mentioned moose, what's the largest moose you've seen on the hoof by guesstimate? Horns.
You know, I've never actually shot a really big moose. I've seen a few big ones, but they were kind of off in the distance, and I didn't want to have to carry them.
That's a good man.
I mean, I've seen some big ones because I've flown moose surveys, and kind of the funniest thing is I think the biggest moose I ever saw must have been well past prime when I was flying moose surveys once several years back, because there were 8 or 10 big bulls standing next to each other, and you could tell some of them were in the mid-70s, their racks. But the biggest moose actually had like a 45, I'm just estimating, but like a 45-inch rack, but his body standing next to the other ones was just huge. I mean, he was had to be 300 or 400 pounds more. Uh-huh. And so I think he was well past prime, but he was just enormous. I didn't want to shoot him, so.
Okay, good. I agree with that distance on moose. And the older you get, the more sensitive you come to that issue.
Senator Wilkowski.
I'll just add, I met with Mr. Fleener a couple weeks ago, and I spent probably 45 minutes or an hour with him talking about wildlife issues. Extremely impressive person and a very, very impressive resume. So I'm very happy to support you, Craig.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Craig, thank you very much, and keep up the good work, and good luck in your confirmation. Let me just announce quickly for those that are here for the Board of Fish, we will not get to that topic or the individuals today. It'll be next week, and we'll take that back up, and we'll be in touch with you to let you know about that. Let's next go to Mr. I think it's Howard Delo. I only have Howard here. And Big Lake, you're signed up. Howard, do you have anything to add?
He would be for fish.
Okay, Mr. Wade Willis. Mr. Willis?
Hi, yes, I'm there.
Yes, you're signed up to testify?
Yes, thanks.
Please.
Thank you very much for allowing me an opportunity to testify. My name is Wade Willis. I've been about a 20-year resident of Alaska. My wife's a lifelong Alaskan and raised a family here. I'm an avid moose hunter, and I make a living in the tourism business. And I'm just here to also support Craig Fleener's nomination. I think he has the diversity we're needing for the board. He has a good background and the scientific knowledge to understand the complex issues that are before the board right now, especially in reference to aerial predator control. I also want to remind the committee here that the Board of Game has been mandated to represent all of Alaska. And presently, we don't have diverse representation on the board in any way, shape, or form. Only 14% of the state buys hunting licenses. And there's nobody in the non-consumptive arena for tourism on the Board of Game at all. and we're the largest employer industry in the state, and we certainly have a vested interest in our wildlife resources. We're also bringing more money to the state coffers more than any other industry other than oil, more than any of the others, commercial fishing, land industry, mining, all that. So, you know, it's really important that the committee understands that to be able to effectively manage our wildlife resources, you have to offer fair and equal representation to all the user groups in the state. And I'm very disappointed that it seems that this administration is going to continue to try to stack the Board of Game with a single user group, basically hunters and trappers. So in that vein, you know, and I know Senator Lida Green is very interested in diversifying the Board of Fish. So I'm asking you now to work to diversify our Board of Game. And in that vein, I don't believe Mr. Bradley brings that diversification that we're looking for. I think Mr. Bradley is a wonderful individual, but I just don't think a few classes in biology 25, 30 years ago, and the fact that he's a sheep hunter writing a book and picks up horn, gives him the ability to understand and effectively deal with multiple user group issues on the Board of Game, and especially in reference to aerial predator control. And I'm also concerned that the board of, that this committee never asked any questions in regards to working with the public's intent on aerial predator control. You know, in 2000, we passed aerial predator control as being something that we could support if it was done by fish and game biologists and if it was mandated to use scientific information. Yet you guys never ask about that. You never try to bring the public into the process, and that disturbs me a lot. And you often pound that, you know, do you think science is important to initiate an air predator control? And, you know, everybody says, sure, we think it's great, but yet, you know, the record doesn't stand on that. In 2004, the Fish and Game themselves advised the Board of Game not to initiate predator control programs at that time in the units they were interested in, and the Board of Game overrode the recommendation of the Fish and Game. So science is only used when it's convenient, when it goes with the rather limited view of the Board of Game. And it's rather limited because we have no diversity on that Board of Game. It's extremely important that this committee respect the mandates for that board and respect the fact that the tourism industry has a vested interest and the non-consumptive users in this state have a vested interest in our wildlife resources. And I sure hope we'll take a hard look at that and try to bring that to the board. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Willis. Questions or comments from Mr. Willis? Senator Green?
Mr. Willis, you or any of your fellow cohorts or members of your interest group apply for the Board of Game?
No, actually, I haven't, and I don't have any friends who have.
Okay.
And like I say, I'm not sure who within our industry actually mm-hmm. has attempted to apply mm-hmm. for the Board
okay.
of Game. I know oftentimes the governor herself or the industry or the office of the governor herself will go out and seek people that they feel are appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that all the nominees have actually applied. Matter of fact, I don't think many of them have.
Okay.
I don't think Mr. Bradley actually applied. He was contacted. Mr. Fleener didn't apply. He was contacted. So, you know, it's not a case where nobody wants to be on board. It just, I think a lot of folks don't understand the process of how to get on the board.
Because I know that there's generally for each of the boards and commissions, they have more applicants than you can shake the stick at, you know. And some people call, you know, write in and apply for multiple appointments to various boards. So the opportunity is there. So you might want to kind of share it with your cohorts and let them know they do have the opportunity to apply and then have their name forwarded to us, or at least their application be part of the packet, which would be good.
Yes, I totally agree.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Willis. Next, we will
Mr.
go to
Chairman,
Matt.
Can I
yep, sorry. Senator Stevens has a question for you.
Just a quick question, Mr. Willis. Maybe I misunderstood you, but I think you implied that that you outstripped commercial fisheries as for jobs and impact on the state. And if that's true, I'd appreciate any written information that would show me that that's the case.
Oh, yeah, I definitely can. Yeah, there's several bills going through the House right now that specifically note the quantity of money that is brought into the state coffers. And I'd be more than happy to point you to those direct senators and the direct tax that they're using. And they can certainly show you exactly where within the government records that they obtain that information. I'd be more than happy to do that.
Thank you.
Okay, and thank you again, Mr. Willis. Next, we will go to Matsu, Mr. Bruce Knowles. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here. Thank you for your time. I'd like to advise you that...
Bruce, just put yourself on the record.
Okay, I'm Bruce Knowles from Willow. I'm the chairman of the Susitna River Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and I would like to let you know that the advisory committee did not get word that you were holding these hearings today. It had to come out through back channel, and we were not able to get a consensus from our people on how to vote on these new appointments. And I think that's a major fallback on the board process. So I ask that you maybe at the board support section to get the word out when you're holding these meetings. It would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, and thank you, Bruce, for that. Next week we will do the Board of Fish personnel, and we will definitely get the word out to you.
Okay. I want to thank you very much. That's all I have at this time.
Yeah, and Bruce, just for information, it was noticed last Thursday that was happening, public notice, and it was advertised in addition. So there is a process, but, you know, sometimes it falls short. And we'll make a very deliberate effort to make sure you're aware of it.
Okay, I guess I'm out of that loop there, so I'll put my name in there at the LIO office, and that way I won't be.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, you bet. Thank you. And next we'll go to Soldotna, Mr. Paul Shadura.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Shadura. I live in Kenai. I'm a longtime board member of the Kenai Soldotna Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I'd like to support Ted Spraker for reconfirmation to the Alaska Board of Game. Mr. Spraker has shown the public to be steadfast in his support of management practices that has benefited all consumptive users within the state. In a previous life as a Kenai Peninsula Fish and Game Manager, Mr. Spraker was diligent in informing the public of the opportunity and of the health of the wild resources. Ted Spraker is a true guardian of the resource. Please confirm his appointment. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Paul, for joining us today and representing your community. Any questions or comments for Paul? Seeing none, next we will go back to Matt Sue to Mr. Steve Runyon. Hello, Steve, you there?
Hello, Mr. Huggins. Can you hear me okay?
A little weak, but continue.
Yes, thank you. My name is Steve Runyon, and I'm just representing myself. Along with Bruce, I wasn't aware that this the board game hearing would be today until just a couple minutes ago. But I'd like to speak to Bradley's appointment really quick. He was my coach when I was in middle school at Wasilla Middle School, and I think he's a man of great personal integrity that can weigh in on all the different user issues, regardless of his experience within each user group. I believe he can make fair-handed decisions based on the best biological evidence presented to him. You can't discount a man's experience of field in being able to decide properly on board game issues. He testifies that he spends anywhere up to 2 weeks to a month every spring in the field looking for antlers. He also spends several weeks each fall hunting. He's been doing so for over 30 years, so he has a very good history in this area and around the state, seeing what game populations have been doing, how they're fluctuating, how the user groups have been more involved an impact or wildlife, hunting impact or wildlife viewing. So that'd be a great appointment to the board. Just speaking to the tourism interest really quickly, I did a short stint as an adventure guide. I did four-wheeler expeditions and snow machine expeditions as well. Number one wildlife that we viewed on these trips was moose. And any efforts by the Board of Game to increase levels of moose populations anywhere in the state benefits not only the hunters who can then go out and harvest meat for the family, but also those tourists that would like to view wildlife. Mm-hmm. Wolf sightings are extremely rare. Even by experienced outdoorsmen, I've spent many, many, many days afield. The average tourist, the animal they see when they visit the state is a moose. I believe a person with a hunting interest who is managing for high abundance of moose for hunters is the collateral impact that there's more for people to see. And that's what tourists like to be able to come up and see game. So I think Mr. Willis' concern as to present interest is very well addressed by the current Board of Game, and Mr. Bradley would be able to do that as well. I wasn't able to research Mr. Fleener at all, but I was very impressed with his testimony. The resume has stated, I think he'd be a great addition too. As far as Mr. Spraker's reappointment, he's been doing a great job. I'd like to see it kept on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Are there questions for Mr. Runyon, questions or comments? Seeing none, next we will go to back to Soldotna to Mr. Ricky Geese. Ricky, you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, my name is Ricky Geese, and I'll be testifying as a private citizen. I am the executive director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, but on this talk here on the Board of Game, I'll be directing as a private citizen here. I want to express my support for Ted Spraker. When I was the both as the museum manager and executive director of the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center in Kenai, I had many interactions with Mr. Spraker. He's always been a strong advocate of wildlife, professional wildlife management in Alaska. And I think his years of service within the department brings a good expertise to the Board of Game and provides an excellent perspective for that, and that he should continue on the board in that regard. In regards to the two other new appointments to the board that the governor has made, I will say after listening to their testimony today, I would support both of them. Having been a new appointment on the South Central Regional Subsistence Board, I see that Mr. Fleener has experience on the Eastern Interior Subsistence Board, the RAC Council there for the Eastern Interior. That brings good experience on the board process, and I think they'll be a valuable addition to the board of game there. In terms of the tourism industry, I was the executive director of the Kenai Convention and Visitor Bureau for a couple of years and worked with the Bureau for 6 years. I have to point out a couple things on consumptive and non-consumptive users that I think is important for the Board of Game and for the tourism industry. While non-consumptive users are very important, I think a lot of that, the revenues generated come through the wildlife tours that go on marine tours, specifically out of the Kenai Fjords, generates a lot of income there, and on the whale watching components of it. And I think that a lot of the birding opportunities in the state are great for non-consumptive users and for wildlife viewing. Moose populations also along the road areas. But when we get into managing game populations, I think the number one manner in which we generate revenues outside of those kind of organized tours is through the consumptive use of it. Game tours, basically when you go out with guides, generate large incomes, and I think those get distributed throughout all portions of the state, as do along with the sport fishing, which is a consumptive use in many opportunities and ways which sport fishing is prosecuted. So I just want to point that out in terms of the tourism industry. Thank you.
Yeah, and Ricky, thank you very much. Any questions or comments for Mr. Geese? Seeing none, we'll go to the final person that's listed here, Mr. Gary Hollier from Kenai.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gary Hollier from, actually, Soldotna, and I grew up in Kenai.
Sorry about that.
Well, that's fine. We've been here a long time, so I'll kind of make it short. I'm
in support of Ted's Breaker for reconfirmation to the Board of Fish. My folks moved here in 45. We grew up on moose meat. In the late 70s, it was kind of hard to get a moose. Somebody with vision kind of put in a spike fork 50-inch regulation in the mid-80s, and the season in the late 70s and early 80s was September 1st to September 20th in June 15 down here. Now we have a 30-day season, and Mr. Spraker was instrumental and pivotal and had some foresight to do something positive for the resource and the people. Now I can take my family out hunting for 30 days. We might or not get a moose, but if it hadn't been for Mr. Spraker and his foresight, we'd probably be down to a 4 or 5 day season. We need people like Ted Spraker on the Board of Fish for the people of the state of Alaska. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Gary. Any questions or comments from Mr. Hollier? Is there anybody else online that wants to speak to the three Board of Game nominees or appointees? Is there anyone in the room that wants to speak to those three? Okay, with that, we will close public testimony. And we have a form for each of the individuals, and I will read it. It's titled Senate Confirmation Committee Report. It says, in accordance with Alaska Statute 3905-080, the Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. And we'll just start these each side. The name of the person is on the form.
I think we need a motion.
Second.
We don't need a motion. Oh.
And a reminder that Wednesday we'll take up Senate Bill 284, Board of Fisheries Membership, and HGR 14, Exxon Plaintiffs. And finally, you have for appointees here.
This is remaining Palin appointees. We have other boards.
Okay. Other appointees, not to include Board of Fish. And then Friday, we will not meet. Okay, further questions or comments? We're adjourned. Thank you.